Hello, everyone. This is part two of the Hackberry Hollow podcast number four, The Origins of Lumaglyph. Let's continue where we left off last week. And that was actually my first experience to two pieces of software. One was called Hash Animation Master, and the other one was called Blender. And what it was just two guys at this really small booth. Well, I don't even know if they had a booth. I think they're just passing these CDs around. They were just giving CDs to people. And it was like Blender 3D. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I'll put that in my bag. So I was really, really impressed with Animation Master. And we actually got to, you know, talk to the CEO, and Chris John was able to get a copy on the spot. It was like a $300 program, which was, you know, at the time when you had all this software that was like $6,000, you know, and we were seeing what they did with like how easy the rigging was, the smart skin where you could actually do the, you know, the mesh deformation when like an arm rotates properly and all that stuff. We're like, wow, this is crazy. And so when I got home, because I already seen what Hash could do. And I got to play with, you know, Chris's copy over at his place. And the free software Blender, I put that on my computer. I did not like it. It did not make sense. I could not figure out how to do anything with it, even though some of the reels and, you know, videos they had on the disc were fairly impressive. But I was like, you know what? I don't understand how to use it, but Animation Master, I can do that. So I started using Animation Master. Funny thing about Blender, good thing their interface is changing, but anyway, but that was like a super early version of Blender. That was before it was open source. So anyway, college happened. I, went to college. I wasn't really too sure what I wanted to do. I think I watched Star Wars Episode One, and say what you want about the movie, but that pod race sequence, I was just blown away. That was cool. And I mean, if you just watch the pod race sequence, yeah, you got to admire how awesome that was. You know, I
never
think,
mind the we interrupt your story to bring you this awesome but irrelevant sequence.
Yeah, what was it, the Quidditch syndrome? Or the podcast.
Oh, yeah, the Quidditch. I kind of have names for all of the different story pitfalls, and that one was the Quidditch one. But the pod race is another example of the same issue.
Yeah. So, but I really liked that, and I just loved the sound design. I was just like, man, people do this. This is so cool, And I really liked the technical side of creating music more than the actual creative side. And this is something that I started noticing that when I was looking back at my music, and just so you know how I made music, it was kind of accidental. It had to sound good and it had to have structure, but I could not think of something in my head and then play it on the piano and then use that as my song. I had to basically plunk around on the keys, find something that worked, and then I could turn that into a song. And it was really frustrating for me that I could not just hear something in my head and then, you know, play it out, because I know other people could do it. And I took classes with people that could, and it was really frustrating. And I realized, yeah, maybe music isn't what I should be doing, because I'm just not that good at it. And again, I'm going to get to this as far as why that was, why I was like that as a composer. I was realizing that my music was just kind of cookie cutter, and I could only really do like the techno style of music. Which lends very well to the way I created, but it was really well produced and the sound quality was good. And, you know, there wasn't any clashing notes. It was just uninspired music.
That is a great composition of loops.
Yeah.
I think I have the CD that has all those same loops on it.
Yeah. Now what's funny is that I actually did not use loops. Oceanscape. Yes. The drums were loops, but all my other stuff, I didn't do loops. You know, it was all original.
Congratulations. That was the biggest thing turn off for me for techno music was all the loops everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I get the point. Now that little melody, you know, little jingle, you can cut it out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, I see what you mean. Where it's techno music is repetitive, but for me, when I say loops, yeah, when I say loops, because you can actually buy sample CDs, and that's what Oceanscape had. It was I got a sample CD of drum and bass drum loops that were pre-recorded. I didn't have to create a drum pattern. There was one already provided for me that I could use. So those kind of loops. But yeah, music is, you know, kind of repeats and whatever.
Even if you make a loop yourself, you know, I mean, it's okay to have music repeat itself, but if it's just an obvious little single measure loop.
Yeah, that goes on throughout the entire song.
Yeah.
Yeah, which techno music pretty much does. I mean, the drum pattern doesn't really change that much. Occasionally you have like a bridge or something, but yeah. So, I went to BYU, Idaho. I felt good about going to school there, but I did not like their music program at all. Like when I had to declare my major, because they pretty much forced you to, I declared it as music, but what I was really doing is I was just taking my general classes because I really wasn't too sure what I was going to do. I did that for like a year and a half, maybe even 2 years. Was just taking my generals, trying to figure out
without a rudder.
Yeah, just trying to figure out what to do. And actually, it was kind of funny because I got like called in by the dean of the school, being like, "Why aren't you taking music classes?" And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I went around. I was trying to figure out, okay, maybe if they have like a sound engineering program, and they did. They actually had a, I think it was called like audio engineering or something like that. And I wanted to take it, but it was something that was only for the theater department staff. Like, it was a class only for the staff. So I talked to the guy who taught that class, and as it turned out, it was really just, you know, acoustics and mic placement and recording. And if I really wanted to do anything like, you know, what they do in the movies as far as like sound design, he said, yeah, you're in the wrong school. And then gave me, here's two schools that you could probably go to. So I was like, okay, well, this is kind of bummed out. But during that time, again, huge nerd, video games, yada, yada, yada. I think it was actually during this time that I met Shane Jantz, who is also a part of Lumaglyph. He's the guy who actually got me into art. I saw some of the stuff he was doing. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And we went to this LAN party called Lanalot. Really, it was just, a bunch of guys just meeting at somebody's apartment, you know, every Friday. So we just have a LAN party. But then we decided to, you know, make it big. Let's turn this into like a big event where we'll have like 100 people or something like that. So in October 2003, we had a Lanalot Oktoberfest, which we helped organize. And I actually designed the logo and website for it. And I recall, I mean, you know, I kind of felt like, you know, I knew I was a little bit artistically inclined, like, I did the ASCII art for our BBS, and I used Zara 3D to create 3D text logos, you know, for Eric. And, you know, it was just, you know, just poking around with all those 3D, with all the software. Again, more just technical ability, not so much creative ability. And, but I actually designed a logo for the LAN party, which was actually not that bad, looking back at it. And in March 2004, because I was okay, I think actually during that time, just to backtrack a little bit, I took a biology class, and one of the assignments in the biology class was to do something creative, just do something that was, you know, creative, that was kind of based on biology, and pretty much we could do anything we wanted to. And so I was like, you know, I like the demo scene. I like watching demos and stuff like that. What if I did a 3D animation using Animation Master that was like, you know, viruses and bacteria and, you know, all this stuff. So I did this animation called Freakishly Large Receptors. And that's kind of an inside joke with the, within the class. I won't get into that. And actually this video is not online. I should probably do that at some point. So you can't Google it because it doesn't exist. I haven't uploaded it yet, but, it was like a demo scene inspired, video of, you know, the microscopic world, to techno music, of course, not mine though, which is actually why it hasn't been put online yet. but anyway, the instructor was blown away. He was like, wow. You know, and some of the people in the class were like, you know, I actually got like an emotional response, like watching this animation thing that you did. And actually doing that project, made me not want to use Animation Master, anymore. Because it was patch based. It used, spline patches. It was great for organic stuff, but when you try to do anything like that was not organic, it just didn't work. And triangle patches, the textures were like all weird and swirly, and it took forever to render. Oh my goodness. Oh, it was tough. it was a hard thing to use. So, and then I think I read a Slashdot story about Blender being open sourced. I'm like, I remember that program. That program is a piece of crap. But it's free, and I guess people like it. You know, I'm going to try it again. And maybe I'll actually read the manual. RTFM works. I read the manual, and I'm like, wow, this software is actually pretty darn good. And whenever there is a feature that I wanted is like, you know, I'm going to do something that's going to have like reflective surfaces, but there's no ray tracing yet. Bam, they added ray tracing. And then I just kept on going on from there. You know, I'm like, you know, car paint has this weird kind of text, to get the effect, it's called a ramp shader. I didn't know that, but then the next version, bam, they added ramp shaders. I'm like, oh, sweet. You know? So I really liked using Blender, and I used Blender to create a opening ceremonies video thing for Lanalot. And I also did the music for that. I did the music using Buzz Tracker, which was a software synth. I didn't like the song that I did. It was really cookie cutter. And Buzz Tracker, I was really restricted to the software that I was using. But, you know, people liked the video, the opening ceremonies thing. So that was when I started to think, you know, I'm actually doing more art-related stuff than even like music or sound. Maybe I should actually get an education in graphic design. Which I found out was what, you know, like logo design and doing all these little motion pieces, because they weren't, it's not really like animation. It's just objects moving around very simply, you know, like a spinning logo. Yeah, that's motion design. So that was when I started taking, it was like, all right, I'm going to be a graphic designer. I'm going to take graphic design classes. I did a logo. I did a website. This is graphic design. I'm going to get an education in this so I can stop taking all these general classes, and maybe play less video games. And the first class they had me take was a drawing class. And shockingly, I was actually pretty good at it. And then I started taking, you know, more art classes, like figure drawing and head drawing. And actually, head drawing first, then figure drawing. And found out that I was actually doing pretty good in those classes. And then I was more interested in doing like illustration and painting. So even though I was a graphic design major, I was just drawn to all these, you know, illustration-related classes. So much so that I pretty much, you know, filled up all my, you know, credits with those illustration classes. And then there's also the Oktoberfest, Lanalot Oktoberfest 2004. That video is online. It's on YouTube. And I did the music for that. The music was better. The animation, you know, was all right. But yeah, that was pretty much the last song that I ever did that was just, you know, on my own. I stopped doing music after that. except for one exception, which I'll get into later. But I learned something while I was taking all these drawing classes, and I was like, why am I a better artist than a musician? And it was because of how I learned. When I was learning music, I just wanted to compose, so I didn't actually learn performance. I couldn't just sight read music. I mean, I could read sheet music, and after a lot of practice, I could play the song. But some of these people, like the guys that performed my music that I composed at Kell Arts, they didn't even have to rehearse it. They had the sheet music I was conducting. They just saw it, and they just played it all in one go. I was blown away. I'm like, holy crap. You know, people can actually do this. And the performance was flawless. And I couldn't do that as a musician. But as an artist, they trained me to actually draw from life first. So if you want to be a musician, if you want to be a composer, you need to be able to perform, and hopefully performing for the instruments that you are composing for. Orchestra, yeah, all right, but guitar or whatever. You need to be able to play the ideas that are in your head, and have the computer record it and not rely so much on the computer to just, you know, punch in all the notes and manipulate stuff until something sounds right. You know, the trial and error approach to music composition, which is what I did, and it took way too long. But with art, I could just do it because I learned properly. So that was one of the big lessons I learned as far as making sure that you learn how to do something properly. Start with the foundations first, and then you'll be a lot better off. I probably could have been a composer had I had teachers who insisted that I learned performance first. So while I was at college, I think I was one of the jobs that I had was a web designer for activities division at the school. And the secretary there suggested, you know, when I kind of showed her some of the 3D stuff that I was doing and how I was using Blender to create this graphic design work, she said that I should teach that as workshops. So in summer of 2005, I actually started teaching the Blender workshops at BYU Idaho, and the turnout was crazy. we borrowed the Mac Lab. I was able to get the school to buy 30 mice, I think it was, 33 button mice, because the software requires that you use three button mice. And I think like the first week, the room was full. I mean, people had to sit down or people had to stand. It was just crazy. The numbers after that started to dwindle, but that was pretty successful, and I really started liking teaching, through that. And I think it was one semester after that was when I actually met Adam, and I was doing a demonstration on UV unwrapping.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you remember that.
Okay. This was winter, 2006.
Okay.
So I don't know if that would maybe been two semesters later. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay. So I was a Maya user, and I did then and still now know Maya like the back of my hand. It's like I can pick up that software and do anything with it. I remember sitting down, and of course I found out about this workshop from a friend of mine. So, oh yeah, there's computer animation workshop on there. You're interested in that. And of course, first thing going through my mind is, oh yeah, I've been animation class. They're probably just teaching software and stuff. And so I was cautiously optimistic that I would learn anything in there. And then I found out, oh, they're using Blender. I'm like, oh great. I use Maya. I'm going to go to the open source software. It probably sucks because it's free. And let's put it this way. I no longer have that mentality. Yeah. Okay. I sat down in there. It was either the first or second time that I was there. Glenn demonstrated the UV unwrapping. And it was so vastly superior to the way that it is done in Maya that I was in shock. I just sat there drooling at this thing. He would pin different parts of the mesh, and he'd stretch it proportionally, and within minutes he had a very well unwrapped model that would have taken me hours to do what he did in 5 minutes if I was using Maya to do the same thing, using the most advanced tools that Maya had to offer. And I knew what Maya could do.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting there just like, the free open source program did this? What the f- there goes my worldview. So I went up to Glenn afterwards. I had my notebook out. I was taking notes. Like, I got to learn this software. Even if I don't use it completely, I have to have this as part of my workflow somewhere. And now, granted, this is my first semester up at BYU-Idaho. I still was not very good as an artist. I knew the technical stuff very, very well, but I didn't have much technical, like the art side of this whole thing down. And I think that same semester we actually had us do a 3D model, and that one that I brought back wasn't that bad. But even so, I mean, the technical side of it was very good, but no art to back it up. So I was a very faithful attendee of this workshop for a while.
Yeah, and one of the things that I did for this workshop, because again, just, you know, the realization that I made as far as the whole, you know, learning art one way, I turned out this, and then learning music this way, and I turned out meh. You know, I started realizing that there's some very important things as far as like how to structure your classes in order to teach them properly and being very, very focused. And for these Blender workshops, because they didn't really, I mean, it was once a week. People were already swamped with homework, so I couldn't really demand that much out of people. I had to really pick my, you know, I had to pick what it was that I was going to teach, and I decided to teach just the software. I'm not going to focus on the artistic end of it. I just want to teach how to use the software. And that's what I focused on. And then later, I actually started branching out and started doing two workshops. The other one was the digital painting workshop, which I taught people how to use Photoshop, and that was pretty well attended to. And that was of course, you know, a little bit more art, but again, it was really, really, really focusing on the software. I think our last semester or second to last semester, well, actually, no, we did this for two semesters. It was the 3D animation studio where we actually tried to gather artists, you know, people in the college together to create an animated short, because we were, you know, we were looking at what some of the other schools were doing, in particular BYU Provo, as far as their animation division. We're like, yeah, I wonder if we could do that with Blender. In short, no.
It wasn't because we were.
It wasn't Blender. It was time.
Yeah, it was a time commitment, because the students at BYU and Provo, I mean, they were doing that all day long. So
they're getting credit for it.
You couldn't do that and your full schedule at the same time. That was really what killed it.
Yeah, so that was a problem with scope. And it was good to kind of learn that lesson.
We kind of learned that the hard way. We had this project that I kind of pushed for this, because really in my mind, I didn't really care that much what the project was. I just wanted to be working on a animated project in order to get my skills up. And so we started out with this Liam's Travels short, and it was going to, but as we started throwing out ideas, remember, like, I'm passionate about stories, and it turns out so is Glenn, and we both are perfectionists when it comes to stories, but we both had this imagination that we're just churning out ideas and bouncing off each other. I would throw out an idea, and Glenn would take that idea, build on it, make it better, and he'd throw it back, and I make it better still, and then vice versa. And then it ended up being this short that we projected at 10 minutes. Reality is, we animated the whole thing, it'd be closer to 20.
It might not have been that long. I mean, we never actually got around to, we did have someone actually storyboard it, but we didn't do an animatic of it.
Yeah, we didn't do an animatic, but I think it would have been a lot longer than we were projecting. We projected 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it would have been longer than 10 minutes. But We just didn't have like the time because we were all students. We're all busy. This wasn't for credit, and this, and so so I had a personal project I was working on that was a much smaller scope. And that was inspired by the Firefox ads. I had a couple of ideas for,
you mean it was inspired by the Mac ads?
Well, it was inspired by the Mac ads, but Firefox had their own ad campaign that was going at the same time. So I guess it was kind of inspired by both.
Yeah. I think Mozilla had a contest. Was that what it was?
Yeah. It was a contest, to make your own. Now I didn't do anything for the contest, but I thought about it and I was like, I could do something independently. And really I didn't and still don't give a crap about Firefox. The whole point of the project was to give me something to do. And it's like, hey, that concept works. Yoink. Yeah, I'm a product of the 90s. Yoink.
Yoink.
So I had like about six ideas for ads and they were the format of the Apple ads. You had the two characters standing side by side, and I think they're still doing this campaign. That campaign's been going forever.
Actually, they stopped it recently. I'm a Mac, I'm a PC. Yeah, they actually did stop that.
Oh, they did stop it. Okay.
Yeah, but it was only like a few months ago. But thinking of how long, I mean, how many years has that been going on?
Yeah, that one's been going on for. Well, it was a very successful campaign. It was to the point. It was punchy. It was funny. Anyway, so it was that format. And so I had Firefox, which is a little anthropomorphic fox, and then Explorer, which was like a Dr. Livingston, you know, with the cap and the blunderbuss. And he was actually modeled after the character from Jumanji.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he looked great. I mean, that character was hilarious.
Yeah. See, now here's something that I do want to point out. Liam's Travels, the Blender workshop studio thing that we were trying to do, you know, through the school. The only thing we were able to get done was like some concept art and like maybe one art asset, which was just like the character 3D model. That's as all as we were able to get done with that. But for the Firefox, we actually had models.
All the characters. We had a model. We had a fox. We had the Explorer. We had the opera singer, which was supposed to be the opera browser. And the idea, she was obese and opera's bloated. Get it?
Meh.
Okay, so then we had an actual leopard, and he was supposed to be Safari because it was from Leopard, which was their operating system at the time.
Yeah, we never did finish that one, though.
No, that one was finished.
Oh, that's right. All of them was finished. That's right. You did it. Yeah, the only character I think I designed was the opera one.
Yeah, you designed the opera one. I just did the leopard because I just based it on a real leopard and kind of anthropomorphized him a little bit. I had a weasel for Ice Weasel. Mm. And the joke behind there was we had like 20 weasels would come in because they're all just forking it everywhere.
Yeah.
Wasn't there one more? No, that may be all of them. Chrome didn't exist yet. I think that was it. Yeah. Yeah. But all the characters were done. The sets were just going to be simple, just the white background. We even recorded the voices for this.
Oh, and we had some awesome voice work.
The voice work was amazing. We got actors on campus. The Explorer and the opera singer were both absolutely hilarious. We got those two in front of the microphone. They got in character, and we were constantly back there laughing. They had the opera saying, well, I'm wearing a metal bra. Then the Explorer go, oh, me too. But that's beside the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one we actually got really far. But what happened was that I went in there to animate. Now, granted, I've been studying animation for years. I'd done it forever. But I was not trained as an animator. That wasn't going to stop me. Because I've done a lot of animation, but I wasn't that well trained. But the other problem that I had was I sat down to animate it, and then I looked at these. We're putting this stuff together, and none of these were true anymore. We'd spent a year on this project, and you know, one of them was Internet Explorer getting pissed off at Acid. They're all trying to do a painting. They're trying to paint Acid 2. And the Internet Explorer, it's all like red and stuff. Well, Internet Explorer's Acid 2, they came out with Internet Explorer 7. If we release that, we just get ridiculed. Like, that's not opening Internet Explorer 7. Hey, you know, it's only slightly off. And then we had, you know, the Opera Bloat one was still true. That one's still true today. But we had the Ice Weasel one. Well, Ice Weasel kind of... I mean, all it is now is it's just Firefox with all the branding removed. It it's not what it was then. You know, none of these jokes were true anymore, and they weren't funny anymore just because they weren't true. They're originally, they're funny because it's true.
It was based on current events. And,
yeah, it was based on current events. And if you have something where it takes a year or 18 months turnaround, that just doesn't work. So I was sitting there ready to animate, and I was like, and going through through all the things. They're all recorded and thinking, crap.
And the other problem that we had is spoofing the Apple ads kind of started getting old.
Yeah, because everyone was doing it.
Which was also going against us. So, yeah.
Yeah, we ultimately dropped the project. But I don't really regret doing the project. I did learn a lot from it. I got better at modeling. When I finally started taking sculpture classes, because all a computer model is a 3D, you know, it's a digital sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in that sculpture class. The very first sculpture I ever did with clay, all it was a different medium. I nailed it on my first try, and I had never touched clay before.
By the way, just one thing I want to add. Even though we did scrap that project, the Fox model and rig that Adam created was actually used for Shane's BFA project.
Yeah, it was. I animated him walking across the set. And, you know, the other thing about that model or that walk cycle is because I later went and I actually got real animation training from Animation Mentor. And I'll also point out that I'm under no delusion that simply graduating from a school, no matter how good it was at the school, makes me as good as a professional animator that's been doing this for 20 years. However, I am still professionally trained now, and that does make a big difference. And so I look at that animation that I did, and I can recognize with more trained eyes that it's, well, you can tell that I was a newbie. But for a newbie, it wasn't too bad, and it definitely worked for his project. So yeah, that fox did actually get some use out of it. It was the fox and the grapes.
Yeah, the fox and the grapes.
He was originally meant to be Firefox, and he became the fox and the grapes.
Yeah, for the Aesop's Fables BFA that Shane did, which was awesome. Holy crap.
Oh, yeah, that looked really good. So yeah, it was a complete loss. But even if that didn't happen, I don't consider that a waste at all. I mean, I learned so much from it. I really enjoyed working on it.
Yeah, and we have so many ideas, like so many story ideas that just get dropped, game designs that get dropped. It's just an endless pile of, you know, dumped projects behind us, you know.
But you know what? We got better at with every project, and we got feedback on every project. I know what did I screw up on that one, and how could I fix it on this one?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just an endless, you know, torrent of getting better.
Yeah.
Use everything to your advantage. Use the whole buffalo.
Yeah. And I think that's another lesson. And they say, you know, the not give up thing, but just so you have like what this means in perspective. Again,
yeah.
So many failed projects of ours or projects that we just kind of dumped. That is perfectly fine. It is absolutely perfectly fine to be like, yeah, this project isn't going to work. And you just leave it alone. That's not lost time because you are learning. And then sooner or later, cross our fingers because we're still going to hit this point soon, we hope, you release something that just blows people away and then that launches your career.
And you know what the nice thing is? And this, I may negate this by saying this right now, but...
Are you tempting fate?
I'm... I may be tempting, but you know, if we do, I'm going to say if, okay, I'm going to say it as an uncertainty because anyway, but when we do release something that turns out to be good and that's the first impression people have of us, they don't see how much work it took to get that or how many times we fell on our butt, but we got back up and kept trying.
Yeah,
and the other thing that I think really improves your chances is recognizing that there's room for improvement.
Yeah,
I'm not perfect. I'm not the best animator in the world. I'm not. Look at how much better than me the people are that train me. Good word. I don't hold a candle to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did pretty well compared to other students, but even then, there were students better than me. I wasn't the biggest fish in the pond by a long shot.
Yeah, well, you're going to class with people who actually worked at you know, who actually were working at Blue Sky or DreamWorks or...
Oh, yeah. I had classmates that were already in studios. They just wanted to get better. They wanted, you know, they also wanted to have a animation mentor on their resume.
Yeah.
Which are both worthy goals, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I met one of those guys. There was a guy who worked for Bungie, and he would, you know, it would be 5 minutes before it's time to... time to turn in our assignment. They're due Sunday at noon, California time. And I would be working on this thing. I would go like 48 hours of no sleep after having worked on it all week. And I'm just uploading stuff every couple hours to get more feedback. I'm requesting stuff from instructors. And this guy, 5 minutes before it's due, he'd fart out a animation that he'd been working on for the last 2 hours, and he'd kick everybody's butt. and I'm thinking, why are you taking that? Well, granted, I mean, he said... And this is something I totally agree with. Why did I even ask him that question? Why are you even taking this? Because I'm not good enough. Because I'm not the best. Because I will always have room to improve. There are always people out there better than me. And if they're willing to help me improve, I would be foolish to pass that up.
Yeah, and I think stuff like just that that mentality, I think, really defines... what we are as a studio, because we, I mean, Adam and I met because I taught Blender workshops, you know,
but we stuck around because we both kind of had that mentality, and we both were passionate about a lot of the same things.
Yeah. But this whole idea of, you know, just wanting to be helpful and helping people improve and knowing that, you know, we are not that hot, you know, we're
not
hot.
The best.
We're yeah. We're so.
Hey, he thinks I'm good enough to ask me a question. Yay!
You know, and yeah, it's just constant improving, and hopefully getting something done, which is another lesson of scope, which we'll get into when we start talking about Hackberry Hollow.
Oh yeah, it was all the scope creep, but you know, even with Hackberry Hollow, not everybody's gonna love it. I know that. I hope a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And I put a lot of work into it. I got a lot of feedback. But, you know, everybody's different. Everybody has different tastes. So, yeah, I recognize that. And not all feedback is going to be useful because, again, people have different tastes, and a lot of the feedback may be based on taste. But I think that all feedback that I get, even stuff that's really subjective and based on taste, is still relevant because I can still learn from that. And I can still say, okay, this is something in here that person didn't like. So, Is this something that I can use to make my next story better? And really, I mean, once Hackberry Hollow is out, since we're doing the whole script in advance, if you give us feedback halfway through, we're probably not going to ever be in a position where we can just go in there and make these big changes just because we're going to be following a script. But what we will do is we'll look at that feedback, and in our next story, we're going to go, okay, how can we apply this? How can we make this better? Or put it back in the memory banks and not make the same mistake twice. Mm-hmm. Okay, I recognize that I screwed up on that. Let's not make the same mistake again. Let's make this one better than the last one. That's our benchmark. That's the thing to beat. And that experience from the last one will help us get there.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing, you know, just I'm going to be wrapping up my kind of origin story behind this really quick, but while I was still doing my BFA project, which you can check out at my Vimeo channel, it's the Touch the Table project.
Very awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah, so it was the thing that I really liked about graphic design, and I think it's the reason why I didn't decide to change my major to illustration, because honestly, the first graphic design, the first class that I took for graphic design was, by the way, this is kind of an interesting tidbit, because the way BYU Idaho works is they have a 3-track system. And once you get on a track, it's like really impossible. And what I mean by a track is it's not really semesters, it's really trimesters. You have a fall, winter, and then summer semesters.
Yeah, you take classes during two of the 3 tracks, and then everybody's staggered so that the school has a full class of students going on year round, and each track is equal length, including the summer one.
Yeah.
So if you're taking classes during the summertime, your you know, semester or trimester is every bit as long as the winter or fall.
Yeah. So basically it's a really effective way for the college to just have a constant student body in there. And I just happen to have been put on winter was my off track. And
so it would have been summer fall.
Yeah. So I was summer fall, and I was like, oh, that's fine because I said music. So like, oh, okay, let's put you on the summer fall track. But then I wanted to switch majors, and the art classes were only available for people who were in the fall, winter, or I guess winter, summer, not the track I was on, because there were some classes that were required that were only offered during the winter. So I had to go to the dean of the art department, have him, you know, get me so I can get an exception so that I could essentially be taking classes full time in the winter. So I was off track once for one winter. I think actually during that winter semester when I was off, I did write the To Those Learning 3D article, which people really liked, but the rest of my time was spent playing World of Warcraft, because it just came out.
Yeah, I'm going to flog you later for that.
Yeah, which, well, I don't think you actually even, you didn't meet me then.
Yeah.
So you can't flog me for stuff that you, yeah.
I still can.
I suppose. I only played.
If you deserve a good flogging, you will receive a flogging. Deserve and you shall receive.
Yeah, I only played that game for like 3 months and then stopped. Thank goodness. But, And that's another story, because
he narrowly missed having his soul sucked away.
When I realized what Blizzard was doing with that game, it's all right. Screw it. I'm going to go on a tangent. People, let me tell you something about World of Warcraft. It's insidious. It's a trick.
Hail Satan.
When you, oh, Penny Arcade, love you guys. When you first start playing the game, it's a casual game. You can just explore. You can do whatever. Then you start to level up and you have to go into contested territory. And then you have the Alliance, in my case, the evil people who are trying to kill you and prevented you from completing quests. So you had to gang together just so you could survive, so you could level up more, so you could play more without dying. And then when you get to a certain level where you had to start doing raids, and I saw this happen to friends around me who would play the game a lot more than I could, who started joining guilds like the Lancelot Guild, it ended up becoming something that was originally casual to then survival to a commitment. And I was like, oh boy, okay, I need to stop playing this. So I did. All right, so where was I? Yes, graphic design. The reason why I wanted to continue being a graphic design major instead of illustration, because after like the first class, I was like, oh, wow, I actually do like this drawing stuff a lot better than, manipulating photos and laying out type and yada, yada, yada. Although my motion design class was awesome. The thing that I liked most about graphic design was the process. This whole idea of it being research-driven, and the teams that you had to have in order to create a successful design project was multidisciplinary. You couldn't just have, like, you know, one designer do a project, or two designers do a project, or three designers to do a project. You would need, like, to do something serious, like product design or industrial design, you would need a designer, a psychologist, a engineer, and maybe a fine artist just for the heck of it. And that's actually what IDEO does. And I love IDEO. Everything that they do churns to gold. They're an awesome company. This is the end of part 2 of the Hackberry Hollow podcast, number 4, The Origins of Lumaglyph. The third and final part of the podcast will air next week.